everybody. Welcome to the Good Evening Kitties podcast, the Tales from the Crypt review. My name is Melissa, your ghostess with the mostest, and today's episode is Season 3, Episode 9, Undertaking Pollard. Today I have with me my guest host, Joe, from the Discography Discussion podcast. Hey, Joe!
What's up?
How's it going?
And if you are ready, I'm not going to do it here, but I really want to.
Thanks for being on here today.
Thanks for having me.
So, what is your history a little bit with the Tales from the Crypt?
I first saw Tales from the Crypt sometime in the 90s when it was in syndication. So I actually know it as HBO Presents Tales from the Crypt and a lot less gory than what was actually on cable television at the time. I first saw, I think it was called What's Cookin', which, spoiler alert, meatloaf is the answer. And I was in right away because it's this kind of goofy tone, horror, not really... a goof-off session, really. It's like, wouldn't this be funny if... Okay. But it's horror, so I like it.
Yeah, this episode today was... I completely forgot about this one, and then some of it I was like, geez, okay. It's a little... Not super graphic, but the idea of some of the stuff is really disturbing.
Did you know Sean Matthews used to be a hooligan?
Sean Matthews?
That was a Boy Meets World joke.
He wasn't Sean Matthews, though.
What was he?
He was, You're talking about Jason Marsden, right?
Yes.
Yeah, I'm trying to remember what his role was in Boy Meets World. I know he was in Full House as Nelson or whatever.
That might be the problem. A lot of those TGIF faces run together, and I don't watch them anymore.
I think he didn't show up in Boy Meets World until they went to college or something, maybe.
Was he the older brother?
No.
Was he Sean's older brother?
Oh, was he? No. Oh. No, he wasn't. Hang on, we paused for a second. Okay, we looked it up here. And it looks like he was in, when they were in the high school, I think he just kept his name Jason, and he was like the best friend to Eric Matthews, who was Corey's older brother, had nothing to do with Sean.
Clearly, I haven't watched the show in a while.
Yeah, I kind of remembered him on there, but I couldn't remember if he had like a bigger role or not, but yeah, he was like that. He also did some other stuff we'll get to in a second, but is there anything more you need to say or want to say about Tales from the Crypt?
I'm really upset that Tales from the Crypt is not coming back.
See, I'm
less
okay.
upset.
That I'm it's okay with it.
Not coming back with M. Night Shyamalan.
See, I'm okay with all that though. I think in this world of remakes and reboots, it's just not. It won't be the same camp and stuff like campiness.
It wouldn't be the same, but if they just moved forward with it, it would have the opportunity to be cool.
The great thing about Tales from the Crypt was it had different directors. If you just have M. Night Shyamalan, it's going to be all just... It's not the same, like, collaboration it used to be. So
that's why I'm less upset about that portion.
Okay, yeah. And I'm like, that's not... It's just going to be all these, like, twists at the end where you're like, all right. And then, I mean, some of his movies are fun, but yeah, I'm kind of glad it's not, at least for right now, because they're bringing so many things back that I'm like, all right. So yeah, again, Season 3, Episode 9, Undertaking Pollard. As always, John Cassier does the voice of the Crypt Keeper, and Danny Elfman does the theme song. This episode was directed by Michael Thau, who also did editing for the movie Small Soldiers. The screenplay is by Ron Finley. It stars John Glover, who was also in Gremlins 2, The New Batch, Graham Jarvis from TV's Seventh Heaven, Aaron Eisenberg from TV's Star Trek Deep Space Nine, Scott Foltz from Hide and Go Shriek, Jason Marsden from TV's Boy Meets World, as well as Full House and doing the voice of Binks from Hocus Pocus, the kitty cat.
That's the other thing yep. He was in. And, see, I'm a horrible person. I don't look up anybody's credit. I just try to remember it from my childhood.
And also Jonathan Kwan from The Goonies.
It did have kind of a Goonies vibe going on.
Yeah, a little bit, yeah. I'll go ahead and hear and read the back of the box here. The original air date for this episode was July 24th, 1991. And the description is, they're dying to know. Kids believe a mortician is a murderer and sneak inside the morgue to tape him. So we'll go ahead here and get started on the episode. This one, I liked the intro for this one with the Crypt Keeper. He's I guess, a director. He's in his little director chair with the little horn thing you blow into, talk through, and he's...
It's the original megaphone. Yeah. Just a giant cone.
Yeah, it's not even like, yeah, it's just a giant cone. He's got his little beret and his book that he's getting ready to bring in the episode. I also like here, there's a part where when he does the lights, camera, action, he holds the clapboard and the top of its knife. I thought that was kind of fun. So it just like claps down the knife.
Somebody put a lot of thought into that.
Yeah.
Like, this is going to be one of those things that people just can't get enough of, but it was so quick, just...
Yeah, and this Easter one, egg. Yeah, this one, it's fun, and this episode does have, it's kind of a bigger cast, and just these boys overacting and having a good time, and just, so we'll get into that, so...
The opening lines where they're just cussing.
Yeah, they do.
Remind me of, like, 10-year-old boys.
Oh,
like,
gosh.
What do boys do when they come out of the movies? Well, they're all cussing, so we need to write that down.
They do that a lot. I think they saw, outside the theater, it says Radio Flyer, but I don't think they saw that. It sounded to me like they saw a horror movie or something.
That Radio is, Flyer 2. The Flyer Returns, I don't know.
And they're coming out of the theater, and they all like to make fun of this guy, Normie. He's not really fat, but I guess he likes to eat weird stuff, and so they're just, like, making fun of him, and...
He's the biggest guy in the group, so
yeah,
of course he's
so
the fat
kid. So they
gotta
rag on him, and kind of walking through this dark corridor, which is really something you should not do. I mean, at least they're in a group, but it's still like, okay. And it kind of clips to, you can see this guy's, some camera is watching them. And it's kind of fuzzy and kind of stalking them.
Do you remember VHS tapes? This is what they looked like.
Yeah, it's like those old VHS, those huge camcorder things you had to carry on your shoulder. And so, okay, so that's where they put their bikes, I see. So, still kind of scary. Should have just put it, there's no bike rack outside the theater.
This is the 90s. Bike racks weren't a thing everywhere yet.
And so Normie, or Norm, sees this little red light, and he's like, oh my gosh, did you see that? And
they're
like,
it's the credits. The credits are chasing you.
Yeah, the credits are still going. And it's just this red light, and it's a dark figure, and they all take off running, and Normie ends up getting trapped up on the stairwell, and he can't get the door open, and he's super upset about it.
Ooh, did you see that?
What?
There's something out there. Oh my God, you're right. It's a parking lot.
Come on, man.
Shit, it's got a red eye.
Like Predator, right?
Come on,
look!
And then you find out it's their other friend, played by Jonathan Kwan, and he likes to make films, and he's kind of the rich boy of the group, I guess, and he's got the nice cameras and things like that. It was a pretty good trick. It's kind of fun seeing Jonathan Kwan a little more grown up.
Was he the kid that played Short Round?
Yeah, I think so.
So I wasn't just being racist when I thought that this episode was the Goonies led by Short Round.
Yeah.
I love it.
That, yeah, he was good in it. So yeah, so they scared him. I think Jason Marsden's face here is a little creepy, because he's at first like, oh yeah, good trick, but then he's all like, hey, you want to make a real scary, you know, a real horror movie and all this, and he gets this real creepy face here if you check it out here.
Now he's got straight denim jeans on, he's wearing a leather jacket and a white t-shirt. The only thing he doesn't have is the pin rolls, but is he basically supposed to be a greaser? Like, is this a 50s story that just happened to be filmed in the 90s?
I don't think so. I think it's the time period, or maybe at least, like, the 80s. But he's supposed to be, I guess, like, the tough kid, you know, like, the kid that
I'm waiting
is
for the butterfly
the leader.
Knife for the switchblade to come out.
Yeah, or, like, he's gonna, like, yeah, bring out a comb and brush his greasy hair back or something.
I did that before I showed up.
And so, basically, what Jason Marsden's character is saying, if we're gonna make a real horror movie, we're gonna do this right, do you want to shake hands with a dead man?
Hey, tell me, rich boy, you got the balls to make a real horror film?
Yeah, Phil Normie eating a Twinkie.
Yeah. Hey, you got him, huh?
A real horror film?
Yeah.
Yeah, sure. What do you got in mind?
How would you like to shake hands with a dead man?
And so he knows of this mortuary, and they go over to go get into it, and he immediately tries to just open the door, and he's like, oh, damn, it's locked. It's like, well, yeah. It's probably like 10 at night.
Got out of the movie.
Yeah,
clearly you have no knowledge of rigor mortis, because if you try to shake hands with a dead man, it's just not going to work right.
Well, you just at least touch the hand. I don't know. And so he's trying to figure out a way to get them all in. And he's like, okay, we'll go through the window. So there just happened to be a dumpster right by the window. And there's a line here I thought was kind of fun here. Because Normie's like, I don't want to go in. And he's like, what's up, Normie? You being a pussy? And he's like, bite the bag. And he grabs his junk. And I was like, really, dude? Bite the bag. You're like 10.
There must be a reason I don't remember this from syndication. Like, yeah. There's no way that you could dumb this down for TV, I don't think.
It would cut a lot of the parts out. Because most of it is just them ripping on them, each other, and swearing. And it would just be a lot of, like, cutting that out of there. But yeah, the fact that he just did that and said bite the bag, I was like, it's kind of a good one, I guess. But you're like 13 or something, man.
You get to this point where you just start cussing at each other and making innuendo jokes.
Yeah.
And that's when you start telling people to suck it and
yep.
bite the bag. You know what it is, but you don't really know.
I mean, I did something similar when I was 10.
I don't want to hear that.
What? It was basically, me and my friends would sit in the back of the bus and eat fruit roll-ups and swear and flip off cars. That was.
I thought you were going to tell me there was a similar path for girls that I'm not
familiar
with.
No. Yes, we all tell each other, hey, girl, you know, bite the bag, and then you grab your own junk, and they're like, that doesn't make sense. And you're like, all
right. Left or right?
Yeah, oh, God. So they end up breaking into this mortuary, and they climb through the window. They got the camera, and it's just basically chemicals, and I already know it's probably going to get a little crazy, because anytime, a lot of the episodes are in mortuaries or something to do with death and coffins, and usually it gets a little gross, and there's this vacuum in there, and this woman, well, you don't know it's a woman yet, but there's this body on the table, and it's that kind that you can, like, pull forward and, like, make it tilt. It's got, like, the circle. I don't know, it kind of reminds me of the Saw movie.
It's the embalming table, where you can manipulate the body into whatever position you need to drain it.
Yeah, you don't normally see that, though. Like, that's why it reminded me of that episode, or that part in Saw, one of the Saws, Saw 800 or whatever, where the, like, chick is, like, every click, it, like, gets her closer to, like, stabbing her eyeballs or something.
That
was, like,
those
two. Was it three?
No. I think it was five or six.
Five? I don't know.
That was when they just started killing people in elaborate ways.
Yeah, it irritated me, because it's like they're on some of them, especially, like, the one guy with the circle in his jaw, like, hooked to the chains. There's no way he could get out of there. What are you doing?
Yeah, and they tried to make that a plot point, and I'm like, guys, the whole point of this franchise originally was you're going to get hurt, but you're supposed to be in a life-or-death situation that you can actually survive
yeah.
somehow, no matter how ridiculous it might be.
Not having to rip it through and break your jaw and then be all, like, weird, and there's no way. I was like, when I saw that first opening, whatever one that was, I was like, there's no way that guy's getting out.
And then there was the Brazen Bull incident, which, thank you. I never have seen a Brazen Bull in a film.
Oh, yeah, that was pretty messed up. But, yeah, so they're in here, and they're checking out the body, you know, and they got flashlights. They're all kind of like, oh, this is crazy. They go to shake the hand of the corpse, and they pull it back, and they realize they know her.
It's Michael Myers.
It's a woman. Her eyes are creepy, but it's obviously a dummy.
Yeah.
But apparently this is Mrs. Groves, the librarian, and they knew her, and they're like, oh my gosh, and immediately they're like, oh, I'm gonna be sick. They're like, she was so nice, and then as they're looking and they're freaking out, they hear a noise, the guy's coming back. So they forget to cover up the body, and they go and hide, and they all run in different areas, and one hides in, like, a coffin, and one hides in a closet, and in comes Mr. Esbrook, I guess.
This guy loves being a mortician.
Oh my gosh, he's hilarious, like... This guy is he's doing a good job. It's John Glover, I think. He comes in, he's got a pizza. He's got a lot of Pepsi
Product placement. It's the voice of a new generation.
For Pepsi in this. They do some really close-ups of this Pepsi can. He's coming in, he's kind of sashaying through the lab and having a good time, and he notices that the body is is uncovered. And he's like, someone's been in here. He starts talking to her real creepy. You know, saying, like, she used to, I guess maybe he used to ask her out and stuff when she was alive, and she always denied him, and he's like, well, you're mine now. And then this part, to me, gets really creepy.
There's dancing, there's singing, there's classical music.
Yeah, but this part here, I was like, oh no, when he tells her to smile.
Give us a smile. Oh, come now, you can do better than that. Something you want to tell me? Goodness! July around too long, didn't I? You were going to purge before I was ready. Oh, Lucy, 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 Lucy. I'm speechless.
Really? A hammer? Oh, a giant mallet?
It was so good, though. He's like, come on, girl, give me a smile. And then he just takes his hammer and smashes her face in, and they show it, but I mean, it's a clay dummy kind of thing, but it's still disturbing. And then he starts tapping on her face with the mallet to get her to smile, and all the guys are watching him like, ew, okay. Yeah, he's just playing with her face and tapping on it, trying to pull her lips up to make her smile.
Unlike most modern horror, Tales from the Crypt doesn't always explain the reasons behind people's behavior. Like, the overall idea is just, you're a little eccentric. And yes, spoiler, when the kids figure it out, what's going on, and, you know, how the episode plays out, it's interesting that you don't really know why they're doing it. It's never explained.
Well, for
these two
for
guys
money.
Are killing
each
other.
It's just for
people.
Money.
I mean, it's for money, but this guy's clearly just enjoying it.
Oh, yeah, he's having a good time with it.
But whose money is it? Is he paying the pharmacist to kill the people?
Well, we'll get to that in a second. What it is here is, like, okay, so they're watching him, and this part's gross, because, like, when he kind of rolls the body up onto the, like, he pulls it up so that she's kind of askew, and she starts to make, like, a sound, you know, because she's got stuff all in her, and he's like, oh, you were getting bad because I let you lie around too long, and now he took the cloth all the way down, so now she's naked. He puts on his embalming clothes, you know, he's got, like, a apron.
Giant apron, giant set of gloves, giant vacuum.
And they kind of show, like, he's popping her, kind of, because she's full of gas, and then she's smelly, you know, and he's like, oh, Lucy, oh, no. I mean, I don't know, I think as a kid, I would have probably vomited by then, like, the fact that he's just, like, putting a little hole in her, because he's got to, like, he says he's got to purge her, or whatever, and I'm like, oh, man.
This is one of my favorite lines in the whole show. He's exclaiming, I'm speechless, and yet you never stop talking to the corpse.
And he takes this vacuum and he sticks it in the little slit there in her stomach and he sucks all everything out of her. Because by now I guess it's all putrefied a little bit. And you just watch the tube go back to this vacuum. They have, like, of course a clear top on top, so you can see, like, kind of the chunks of everything going around. So it's a pretty disturbing scene. And then he just goes to eat his pizza. He just got done sticking that in her. And
he really enjoys doing what he does.
Oh, yeah.
When you can eat your lunch while the body is being purged.
Yeah, and then, like, it chops it all up and puts it from another hose into... Yeah, right there he's just, like, dancing with this Pepsi can. So you're like, yep, that's Pepsi. And then all her insides are going into the sink and...
This kid's oh no face is priceless. She's just peeking through the door like nobody's...
Yeah, because that's when they, you know, Norm's trying to peek out of the coffin and they hear it, and so they start making noises to kind of throw the guy off. He kind of is like, okay, well, someone's definitely in here. And he goes into his office and he doesn't see anything, so he sees the water dispenser is making noise. So he's like, oh, silly me, it must have been that. So he's like, okay, whatever. So
at this point, this guy's not a murderer. He's just a really weird mortician.
Yeah, at this point, you're like, wow, this guy really is being weird with these bodies, you know? And so they all try to get out. They all go to get out of there. And everyone gets out except for Norm. He's stuck in the coffin because he's slow and fat, I guess. They take off. And that at this time, another man is showing up to the mortuary and they're talking in the background. And Norm is now underneath the coffin under a table and like a cloth and stuff. And you find out that this is the pharmacist and they kind of have a deal going on.
What are you doing here? I want my cut. From now on, I want to be paid on the night before the funeral.
Oh, you're right. You are paranoid. Here.
Well, what the hell is this? $500?
It's a $1,500 funeral. She's just a goddamn librarian, for Christ's sake. After expenses, I'll be lucky if I make half what you're making.
Expenses? Don't give me that. You're gonna stick her in a pressed oatmeal coffin.
You want to make more money on this? Next time you doctor a prescription, why don't you pick somebody that can afford a deluxe funeral?
So this is where it kind of gets where it's more like money, I think. So what it is like the pharmacist, I guess they pick someone who would maybe have some money, and then the pharmacist gives them a shitty prescription or like bad medicine, and then that person takes it and dies, probably very painfully. And then this guy...
anything like what we see later,
yeah,
it definitely hurts.
And then this guy, the mortician or whatever, he takes the body and then they kind of like split the costs of whatever was paid for the funeral. So like, they'll pay for a decent funeral and then he kind of like botches it to where like they get put in a crappier coffin or, you know, stuff. But he takes whatever the money is and they kind of split the money. And so this time he's here to get his money and he's only getting like $500 and he's like, that's ridiculous. This funeral would have been more expensive. And he's like, yeah, we killed the librarian. She doesn't have a lot of money or anything. It was only a 15.
Pine box, hole in the ground.
Yeah. Well, he says it's like an oatmeal box or something like this.
Oh, jeez.
Like, it was only a $1,500 funeral. And so he's like, well, next time try to kill someone who has more money. And he's like, well, I did just give this asthma medicine to this guy who will definitely be able to pay more. And so Norm hears all of this. And so he's like, well, something's going down. So later, he gets out afterwards, which I'm like, poor Norm. Just like, how long he was stuck in there.
I lied. He does have the pin rolls on his jeans.
Oh, yeah, he does. Yep, he's definitely the tough guy in there. And so they're all rolling up to go over and pick up Jonathan Kwan's character. And he's just sitting on the front stoop, crying into his knees. And his name is Josh in here, Jonathan Kwan's character. And you find out that Josh, his dad had passed away the night before from an asthma attack. And you're like, oh. So this pharmacist gave his dad, who was a rich guy, crappy asthma medicine. So they comfort Josh, and then they decide to get everything on tape. So they're filming, like, the intro.
My name is Joshua Kwan. My father's been murdered by the town's undertaker, Sebastian Esbrook. And the pharmacist at Grundy's Pharmacy.
Piece of shit who wears snakeskin shoes.
Our mission is to try to get all the evidence on tape that
we
can.
So we can fry this son of a... Yep.
We know some or all of us may be killed by the time this is seen. I hope that whoever finds this tape will bring it to the right person.
Let's go, man.
And they're like, we gotta figure out, first of all, we know that the guy, he wears snakeskin shoes. So we gotta figure out who the pharmacist is. So I thought this part was, it was a little rushed, but I thought it was kind of an interesting way to figure it out.
Well, this is part of not explaining everything that's going on. This whole episode is from the kid's perspective.
Yeah.
So even when they are interpreting or misinterpreting the information, even though they're not really misinterpreting anything, they could be. This whole episode could just twist and be, what are you talking about? We're not killing anyone. But
well, yeah.
So far, they are set on these two guys are killing people. And you don't really know why. It's money. That's the easy one.
Yeah, but I mean, yeah, you don't, and you also don't know like how long it's been going on. And luckily, they have all these cameras. I guess they're all Josh's, because he has the one, and they're all those big ones, you know, with the mic on them and stuff, but they all end up getting one by the end, so I'm like, okay, I guess he just had a bunch of cameras in.
Was this 91 or 93?
91.
It's really cool how, even though what you're seeing is not the VHS camcorder, but the way they present it, like this whole thing's handheld, there's a scene later where the cameraman is looking through a desk for something, and he's only got one hand.
Oh, yeah.
And I'm reminded of Saturday Night Live. Like, why does she only have one hand with the Continental? Oh, it's because the cameraman's holding the camera.
Yeah.
It's just cool how they put it together. I'm not going to say.
Are you talking about that one with
Christopher Walken?
Yeah.
Which one? All
the one,
of them.
Yeah, the one where she's trying to leave and he's in that nice coat thing and trying to get her to stay.
I like my smoking jacket every now and then.
They make their tape thing and they're like, okay, we got to go. So they head over to the pharmacist or the pharmacy. And part of me is also like, shouldn't Josh be back home helping his grieving mother? Like, his dad just died.
This is all about vengeance.
I guess. But it's literally been, like, the day after, and there's no, like, hey, I have to go with my family and do all these funeral preparations or anything. It's just like, bye, Mom. Have fun grieving Dad. I gotta go take care of some stuff.
Well, this is 91. This is, I'm pissed off. We gotta go do something fun. The kids don't worry about the funeral in 1991.
And so they go to this pharmacist. They're outside. One person's taping it. They had the one kid come in, looking all smooth. He comes in, he acts like he's looking around, and real quick he tries to steal something. And so as he knows the guy's going to stop him, so he's trying to get the pharmacist to come out and stop him. So two guys come out, and they grab a hold of him, and at the time they're like, look at the shoes, look at the shoes! Both of them don't have snakeskin shoes. And so that's when this guy behind them...
smoking a pipe in public, right out in the middle of the street.
Yep, just walking down in a little bow tie. And he's all like, oh, hey, what are you guys doing filming my pharmacy. There's lots of pretty girls out here on the street to take pictures of. And he wants Norman to make deliveries for him, so I guess Norman kind of does that on the side. And he's like, there's one at the mortuary that you should send in, take over to the mortician. And that's when they realize that pharmacist has the snakeskin shoes. So they're like, okay, well, now we know who it is.
The guy that owns the pharmacy.
Yeah.
He's got all the money.
It's actually Mr. Grundy.
Solomon. Love it.
And they still, you know, they're looking at a playpen magazine and out there, and they get this, they get the prescription, but they go to take it to the mortician, Mr. Esbrook, but apparently they got something else. They end up grabbing something else too that was like some sort of caustic chemical.
Yeah, I never really saw what it was.
Yeah.
It's fun later on. Well, it's happening right now, actually.
Yeah.
How this whole thing plays out. He's walking up the stairs. He knocks on the door, and he's behind a pillar, so he steps back. And I'm thinking, okay, that's just smart filmmaking. He's moving back into the frame. But then he very awkwardly and weird goes back down the stairs. And all I can think after he drops this thing on the ground and it bursts into a plume of smoke, he starts running away. Why is this guy chasing him? There's no reason to chase this kid, but he down the street.
I just thought this scene seemed really awkward that this would even get him away from the mortuary.
Right.
Because that's what they're trying to do. They're outside the mortuary. They want him to come out, and then he's going to break this bag and then get mad and chase Norm, and then while Norm's running, which, why you send the fat kid to run, I don't know.
Well, no one expects that,
I guess. But it's like, why would this guy even care? If he would have dropped it, I'd been like, what are you doing? Why'd you drop it? And then I would go call Mr. Grundy for a new
thing. Delivery boy.
Yeah.
Broke my, you know.
So I just, it is kind of weird. So he drops it and immediately starts, like, having this chemical reaction. And that's when, I guess maybe that's why, because he realizes it's not the thing he prescribed or wanted. And he's like, what is this medicine? What are you doing? Like, why is this, who sent this? Like, I guess he thinks someone's maybe after him.
He is saying to him, like, who sent you?
Yeah,
like,
so I guess.
He's the delivery boy for the pharmacy. You've probably seen him before.
Like, yeah.
Who sent him? The pharmacy.
But I guess maybe he's thinking maybe
they know
Grundy is after him or something.
And well, they did have an argument the night before.
Yeah, so he's that's so then he it's apparently battery acid, he says, and I'm like, Is this it? This is battery acid. So he takes off running and he says, Eat it raw, Fuzznut, and takes off running. Mr. Esbrook goes and traces Norm. And as he's chasing them, the other two boys, with Jonathan Kwan's character taping it, go running inside to go check out what's in there. But really, it wasn't even that, it just doesn't seem that great. Like, it's like he dropped the bag and it smoked a little bit. It wasn't anything crazy. I don't know. It just seems really weird that this would even be a thing. But as they go in, you kind of find out why he might be a little paranoid, Mr. Esbrook. Because they all go in and they start looking through his office and they find that he has been kind of snubbing Mr. Grundy. The funeral is actually more expensive than he's been saying, and so he's been keeping a little more money, so maybe he just thought maybe Mr. Grundy already kind of knew and was after him. Because, yeah, they end up looking at the paperwork and finding out, like, hey, this it wasn't a $1,500 funeral. It was a lot more expensive than that.
There's the one arm.
Yeah, he's got the one arm looking through all the paperwork, and there's, like, pictures of corpses, and, yeah, it was actually a $5,000 funeral, so he was keeping a lot more from Mr. Grundy. So they're like, well, hey, what if we take this and show Mr. Grundy and then screw him over too? And so they're like, cool. So they grab the paperwork. What they do is they just, like, secretly send it to Mr. Grundy, like, in a brown manila envelope, like, you might want to see this. And then he opens it and finds out.
Like I said, it's real subtle.
Yeah.
The plot points that aren't explained, that's one of the things I liked about this episode. They're really approaching it from the kid's perspective only. So the stuff that really doesn't make sense, it's okay, because you can put that together.
Yeah. They're like, we want to just focus on the creepy part at the mortuary, so let's get back there, which is what they do. So now Josh is hiding with the camera behind some chemicals up on a window, which I'm like, how did he not see him in this window? It's like right there, like...
Spoiler, when they cut to the other camera, which later on all four kids have a camera.
Yeah.
Where does that come from? I don't know. I don't care. It's that overwhelming sensation of being watched from all sides. Like, we got you.
Well, I think one reason is because at one point the battery gets low, and I think they're worried if, at least if one camera goes out, they all have a camera. So something, it'll all get caught on multiple tapes. He can't get them all.
Well, he definitely must be the rich kid then, because he does the battery's low, and then probably less than 10 minutes later, he's got a new battery.
Yeah.
So either he found a plug, which how did you not see that? Or he had a bag of batteries, which is awesome.
Yeah, he's got the hookup. And yeah, so I'm like, I don't know how he didn't see him in this window. So he's hiding behind just a couple little bottles here. The lights come on and Mr. Esbrook is coming back with a new body, and he's got a bag of chips on it. And he's just eating a bag of chips, and this is his dad, I think.
Did they say it's his dad?
I think it's supposed to be.
Because it's not clear.
Well, the fact that he prescribed asthma medicine and then his dad died from an asthma attack.
And he does have his chest broken open, so there's the battery low.
But I mean, this has got to be, that's his father, right? So that's going to be horrible. Like, this poor kid sitting there, like, and his dad's chest is, well, the dummy. It definitely is a dummy. But the dad's chest is open up, and he's just, like, pulling stuff out of his dad's chest. And he starts pouring, like, cedar chips in there, like, just...
There may be some accuracy to this as far as actual embalming and preparing for funerals. I don't know. He must be selling organs on the side, too. Like, I think there really is more to this than we are ever told.
And it's still, though, he's still got the bag of chips right there, like, in the guy's legs, like, chips. And then that's when Mr. Grundy shows up, and he's like, that's it. Someone dropped off your invoices, and I saw what you're doing, and you're screwing me out of money, and I'm putting an end to this, we're done. Esbrook keeps a really cool head about it. He's just like, oh, no, we don't want to do that, because we could tell the authorities what happened to your wife.
And that's how this whole thing started.
I guess,
I need something to happen to my wife, and I need nobody to find out about it. You scratch my back, I scratch yours.
Yeah, so he's like,
for my mortuary.
If I hide the, you know, I guess because if he did an autopsy, you'd find out. He's like, if I keep the autopsy secret, we kill your wife. And then they're probably like, hey, we could probably make some money off this and just start going. He's like, I had a feeling you'd say something like that. And so he pulls out a little, I guess, a .38. Esbrook's like, those kids are putting us against each other. You're overreacting. I didn't. It's the best because he's like, I didn't screw you over. Yeah, and he's like, I got the proof right here. And then, of course, he gets that mallet out and just smacks him in the face. Mr. Grundy falls onto another...
He's got another table.
Yeah, like another...
Probably just another gurney for bringing in dead bodies.
Yeah, and he falls on it. And this part I thought was pretty messed up, too.
Right. The way this is shot, I know, was just different in 1991. It's cool to see the episode play out from an onlooker's perspective. This is also why I hate the guerrilla style filmmaking, like Cloverfield. It's like shaky cam. I hate shaky cam because you're not actually seeing what's going on. This is what it would actually look like if I was in the situation holding a camera. I'd be holding it as steadily as I possibly could.
Yeah, as much as it is as seeing your dead father's body on this, you know, like,
well, that just makes me more angry.
It's a little shaky, but it's not bad. And this kid's just really wanting to get his revenge, and so he comes over with this beaker of acid, I guess like hydrochloric acid, and he straps down Mr. Grundy, who is coming too, so he's okay, like he's alive, and he pours it down his throat. And I'm like, jeez, okay, like I work with chemicals, and I'm like, that's not good.
TV,
like,
and film have taught me that is what will happen should you ingest said fluid.
That
so
is
there
horrible.
It goes.
And so he starts like frothing bloody like at the mouth and gurgling, and it, you know, it's just basically burning him from the inside out. And so I guess this is what they gave him, in because he kind of makes Mr. Esbrook makes a point of like holding up the old bag that was the delivery and being like, oh, I'm gonna give you a taste of your own medicine. So I guess they bought some sort of acid and just gave that to him. So he thought Grundy sent them that.
He thinks Grundy's trying to kill him.
Yeah. Which is like...
So he had a legitimate pharmaceutical. And the kids screwed with it. So now he thinks he was trying to kill him.
But it's like he was already telling him the kids were setting him up. So why wouldn't he think the same thing on this situation?
He doesn't care at this point. He's insane.
And so he kills Mr. Grundy in front of the kids. And then right there is the best because that's when Josh is like...
That's the last person you'll ever kill, Esbrook.
You're dead, you little son of a bitch.
Hey, hey, hey. What about me?
Yo, asshole.
Hey, shithead.
Watch the birdie.
You're a killer, and we got it on tape.
Put down your cameras and give me the tapes.
Come and get them, Pissbrook.
I got your camera right here, dickwad.
Give it to me.
And that's when they all come out with their cameras. And this part's pretty cool, because it shoots from all the different sides of each camera.
At least one of these is an actual VHS camcorder.
Yeah.
This is pretty cool.
And they come out and they're just like teasing them, and they're like, we got this all on tape. There's no way you could get it from all of us. We have all these different, you know, sides. And he's immediately like, oh, ha ha ha. And he like grabs a...
I got a big knife.
He grabs a knife and he's like, give me the tapes. I love his face though on all this. He's just so serious about it. Nope, just give me the tapes. I'm going to have to kill all these children, I guess. I
roll this dead body at you.
And that's when this part, I rewinded it when this part happened comes up, because I'm like, I can't see this really working too well. So that's when he picks up the .38, and he's now got the gun and the knife, and he's like, okay, I'm serious, give me all the tapes. And you got the lady behind you on the gurney there, and then you got the other bodies, there's just bodies and everywhere. And he's like, you got 3 seconds, I'm not kidding. And that's when they push the body forward behind him of the woman. And he heads straight for Norm, who is holding the vacuum tube. And it's really sharp on one end. I had to go back. I was like, that had to be sharp.
Like I said, there's some truth in the methods. I'm not going to say that morticians, when they're embalming subjects, are using a sharpened shop vac.
Yeah, that's what I see. That was weird.
But there is some truth in that. So it does seem kind of strange that how this plays out, but for all intents and purposes, if we're believing the universe that we're being presented, which we are, his guts are just being sucked out of him.
Yeah, so they take this vacuum and it slams into his stomach area, and they kick it on, and you can see all his blood and stuff getting, it's really gross, like going in the sink, and it's just sucking the life out of him, and he can't reach it, and he eventually dies. And they're all like, sweet, that was for Josh's dad, we got this all on tape. They all look pretty terrified, but then they notice that the librarian's body is now smiling.
Ooh, spooky.
And that's the end of the episode. They get the guy on tape, they end up killing him, and
so they now have 4 copies of
different
teenagers
angles
committing murder.
Hey, there was reason to suspect. I think their case was valid.
Morally, maybe. By the law, why were you there? You never called the cops. Like,
That's true.
In the real world, this would be criticized actions. This is not the real world. This is the Crypt Keeper's world.
Well, yeah, and I do also feel that these kids sure can keep their shit together and pull off a plan and not be scared. They know that this guy killed their friend's dad. They watched him, like, smash a body in the face and open up another body and vacuum stuff. Like, and they're just like, man, that's crazy. Maybe they'll all have nightmares later. I don't know.
But I think Vampire McDowell used an inefficient method after watching this episode.
Vampire McDowell? From The Reluctant Vampire?
Absolutely. It's one of my favorite episodes.
How is that tied in with this?
Well, he just used an inefficient method. He was using a very tiny hole and pumping it out manually. These guys just grab a giant shop vac and are like, here comes all of it.
That's true. But you want more of the blood, though. You don't want all the organs. I guess if you could sift it, though.
I'm pretty sure after being alive for thousands of years, he could come up with a way.
Yeah, that part was, yeah, I was like, oh my gosh, he's got to jump on them, and he's still not even getting any blood out of that, but yeah.
Now imagine that scene with the vacuum sound.
Just out on the street.
I'm making it far worse than it needs to be.
Well, if anyone wants to check that out, that was season 3, episode 7, The Reluctant Vampire. It was
Love it.
It was a good one. So that's the end of the episode. It cuts back to the Crypt Keeper, and he's still in the director's chair, and Crypt Keeper, you're so punny. And the best Crypt Keeper pun is,
ah, well, poor Sebastian. A brilliant career going down the drain.
The next episode is season 3, episode 10, Morning Mess, or morning as in, like, morning to death. There is one little piece of trivia on this episode. On the pizza box that Mr. Esbrook brings in is the name Zemeckis. It's Zemeckis Pizza. Robert Zemeckis is the producer for the series. So that's a little kind of shout out to him.
He directed a few, didn't he, also?
Yeah. So that's the end there. Joe, thank you so much for being on the episode.
Thanks for having me.
Is there anything you want to plug while you're here?
You can find Discography Discussion everywhere you listen to podcasts, Google Play, iTunes, and Stitcher, or you can go to discussmetal.com. Or you can go to heavymetalpodcast.com. Don't ask me how we got that. We don't know either. And you can find everything that we do. I know Melissa has been on our recent episode about The Offspring.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, and that was a fun one. It's getting closer to my 1-year podcast anniversary. So from September 10th through September 14th, I will have something coming out every day. I have some clip shows and movie reviews. So look forward to that. Can't believe it's already been a year that I've been doing all this, so it's been really fun, so got that coming up soon. You can reach the podcast at goodeveningpod@gmail.com. There's also a Facebook page you can join. You can also leave a review on iTunes. You can find the podcast pretty much anywhere you find podcasts. There's also reviews on Facebook. Just all of it. Get into it. Tell people. Have a good time. Thanks for listening to the Good Evening Kitties podcast.
I just had quite a scare. I actually thought my heart